You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Fistful of Collars. Wow. Wow. Do we have a special, special show in store for you guys today? Strap in. This one's going to be a roller coaster because we have the one, the only, Seth Daniels. Fight to win. What is it? CEO. Promoter.
Fighter.
Matchmaker. Fighter.
DJ.
That's
the most important thing.
Just about everything there is to do. Seth does it, and he does it for Fight to Win. What up, Seth? Thanks
What's
for coming
up?
In, man.
Glad to be here. It's so beautiful in Austin, Texas. It's 300 degrees outside.
It's very
it
hot.
It is toasty. What brings you out here to the beautiful state of Texas?
I just came out for the Fistful of Collars podcast.
Nice.
And then I heard there's a Fight to Win on Saturday, so I guess I'll stick around for that.
That's right, folks. Yes. So if you are in Austin and you want to see some elite professional jiu-jitsu and you've never seen a Fight to Win show, you got to come. It's in downtown Austin this Saturday. Check it out. It's going to be a good time.
Chase Smith.
I'm on the card. I'm also on the card.
Austin's own is going to be out there. Chase Smith has a fight.
Thanks, Seth, for getting me that.
Main event, Gabby Garcia versus Nacho.
No, Chase is the main event.
Yes, yeah. The real main event.
The real main event is Chase Smith. Gabby is going to...
Co-main event.
For Chase Smith.
as it should be.
Yeah, I mean, she was like, I'm a 9-time world champion. I've won ADCC 3 times, but... Chase writes all these articles for Flow Grappling.
I'm also 1-0 on the promotion.
Yeah, it was an easy choice. It was really an easy choice.
It was a tough one, but thanks to Gabby for being so sweet.
Stepping
and
aside.
Letting Chase,
Dude, you are a loyal Fistful of Collars viewer. We always appreciate you. What's it like now to be on this side of the camera? You seen that kind of how the cheese is made? What's that saying?
I've never heard that before.
What do they say?
Yeah.
That's a little weird.
It's a little strange. I thought you guys would be wearing pants, So
common misconception.
It's a little bit weird back here now, but I mean.
It's hot in Texas, dude.
Yeah, it's whatever. I get it. Balls get hot. Pants come off.
300 degrees.
Understand.
You said it, man.
So, it's a little weird, but other than that, it's good. It's nice to be here. It's a nice little studio that you guys have set up.
Right.
You
know, it's not too bad.
Very cool. Yeah.
But man, of course, Fight to Win 121. Like we said, we have been you did Fight to Win three in Austin.
Yep.
So it is almost 120 Fight to Win since you've been back before that too.
Yeah.
But
we came back here the last time we were in Austin was Fight to Win 27.
So this is your third show.
It's my third show in Austin. We did 2 in San Antonio, and then just one of those things, man. Just like, there's so much jiu-jitsu on the East and West Coast, and we just tend to go back and forth. And the hardest part about Austin has always been finding a venue.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's the main reason we haven't come back. It's funny because you think, this is a music town. It's not a huge sports town, but it's a huge music town.
There should be a lot of venues, right?
There's no venues out here. Like, since the Austin Music Hall closed...
Mm-hmm.
You're either a $20,000 venue or you're in
a dive
piece
bar,
of crap. You know what I mean? It's like you can fit 7 people here or 7,000. There's nothing in between. So we lucked out, and kind of found this downtown hotel that's going to be super dope and do the show out there. So hopefully it works out well and we can come back and make Austin a regular spot on the tour.
You've been you're of course at your 121st show. What are some of the most common challenges? Is it finding a venue? Is that consistently a hassle for you guys, or is it sourcing fighters, crowds?
It was in the beginning, finding do it. I mean, this is technically, this is our 124th event because we did the Two Subversive and the Submit Cancer. So, I mean, in the beginning, finding venues was really hard because we had no money, you know? So it was like, you look at a venue and it's like, oh, you can get this, you know, piece of crap indoor soccer center for $500, you know, or you can rent this hotel ballroom for $15,000. And in the beginning, you got to do the indoor soccer center. And then, you know, after a while, you start to be able to grow and grow and grow. But now, like, we've really established ourselves in every market that we use. So we pretty much are set on the venues that we use until we go to a brand new place or we outgrow a venue. So that's not really that hard. The hardest part is just keeping up with the schedule.
It is an insane schedule. You guys are on the road.
I don't know how you guys do it.
Everything else is pretty easy. You know, like, it's, you know, luckily, you know, Missy handles all the logistics. And, you know, without her, you know, what she does, I'd go crazy. And I handle the matchmaking and the promoting and stuff like that. That's honestly, that's just the hardest part. It's just everything else is pretty easy. Just like staying awake during the week is hard, you know, because on the weekends you're pretty much up 48 hours straight. And it's like, it doesn't sound like it's that long, you know, to be up and awake and working.
That sounds pretty long to me.
Oh, but I mean, it's really not. I mean, you sound, it's like most people are like, well, I work 40 hours a week or I work 50 hours a week. Yeah, but I do it in 2 days, right? So it's like in 2 days, we put in 48 hours, my staff, right? We get up at 3 o'clock in the morning on Friday and we return at 6 o'clock in the morning on Sunday. And I mean, maybe you sleep a little bit here and there throughout, but it's just like, it's like you said in Fight Club, you know, you wake up in a different city in a different place and it's like, it's the same thing. It's just a copy of a copy of a copy. And so that's kind of where you get. And then it's like so exhausting when you get home, you know, and I've got 3 kids and you know, running the business and just trying to stay on top of everything. And then adding ADCC on, it's like, you know, it's like your bowl is filled with all this like glorious soft serve ice cream. And then like you have like a little bit of sprinkles, right?
Uh-huh, okay.
And then like you take the entire buffet of candy and just dump it on the fucking ice cream. And then that is now what I have. So it's just like, it's spilling everywhere.
Is it too much candy?
It's too much candy.
It's too much candy.
But I've got 6 weeks left and then 6 weeks until ADCC. And then after ADCC, I'm sure I'll pick something else that is very overwhelming. And
we're kind of jumping ahead there a little bit. Maybe not everyone knows, but you are, of course, now an integral part of this year's ADCC. Can you tell me a little bit about what you're doing with the promotion and your involvement there?
I got brought in by Mo. I've been talking to Mo forever about making ADCC more of a spectacle, as it should be, you know, because it's, you know, it's the greatest tournament in the world.
Absolutely.
And man, I've been in his ear for years about this. And, you know, luckily Mo got the event in 2019, right? So it's like, if it wasn't for him, we'd all be going to Kazakhstan, you know? Nothing against the next ADCC, which I think might actually be in Kazakhstan. So please don't be
mad.
But
hey, LA ain't too bad.
LA's going to be fun, though. LA's going to be sick.
Please don't be mad at me for saying that. But, you know, luckily Mo got involved and everything with Mo is first class, right? So it's like, you know, the venue has to be first class. The hotel has to be first class. The food for the fighters has to be first class. The fighters have to be the top level. Like, not that he's super high maintenance, even though, to be honest, he truly is. And but everything about this event, I don't know if I've ever worked with somebody that cares so much about every part of an event.
Well, that's why ADCC is what it is, right?
Right.
A lot of those guys have.
And so he wanted to make sure this is like the grappling event, the best grappling event in history. So he brought in Sean Fowler to help with the logistical side of things. You know, Sean runs Five Grappling. He's a great tournament promoter. And then he brought me in to produce it. So I'm going to be doing the lights and the, well, Evan that works with me will be doing the lights and I'll be doing the sound and the video. And we're doing all the promoting, getting the fighters posters, just making it more of what it should be.
Wow,
you know,
the greatest grappling event of all time.
Of all time.
Is that an intimidating task for you?
No.
You're up
easy.
For it.
It's easy because the bar is set pretty low. You know, honestly, I mean, this
Fight to Win 100 was pretty sick.
Yeah, but this is just the beginning, you know? I mean, if we do this right and we're able to keep doing it, every year we do, ADCC is going to get bigger and Fight to Win continues. If you look at Fight to Win 3, you know, it was pretty scaled down compared to what it is now.
Yeah,
it's night and day.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Even the copycats and pretenders out there, the Kmart shows, probably look better than what Fight 2 and 3 look like.
You think so?
You know what I mean? Yeah, I mean, we had a good start, but I had no money, you know? So now it's like we constantly are improving, getting, you know, better lighting, better technology, better video, better sound, like consistently. It's always going to keep growing. It's always going to keep advancing. And that's really why he brought us in, I think. He brought me and Sean in, was just to let him worry about making sure that he has the best fighters and overseeing everything, and then having us do what we do best, you know. And I think something I learned when I was working at 24 Hour Fitness was the best way to be successful is to surround yourself with successful people, you know. And so he picked two partners that know what they're doing, and we're not stressed out about this event at all. Like, Mo is severely stressed out all the time about everything. And that it's kind of nice to be on the other side of it. And that's usually me, you know. But,
give us a little preview. You know, you don't have to let the whole cat out of the bag or anything like that. But
what are we looking at?
Anything?
What's it going to be?
It's gonna be a good one.
All right. Well,
You don't have to give us a whole preview or anything.
Let's just say the Friday, we're adding an event on Friday night that's going to be open to the public. So there'll be live weigh-ins that are going to be produced, you know, lighting, video, country entrances, fighter entrances. My goal as a child was always to make the Olympics, right? That's all I ever cared about doing when I was a kid, was making the Olympics. And I fell short of that. And I personally, one of the main reasons I want to take this on is that everybody always says this is the Olympics of grappling. Been to the Olympics, seen the Olympics my whole life watching it. So I'm going to bridge the gap between nice setup local tournament and Olympics. And somewhere in the middle is going to be ADCC. That's what I'm trying to merge. And eventually we'll get closer and closer and closer to where it looks more and more like the Olympics. So it's like just having it be so special to the fighters, because it really is. It's like it's the only tournament in the world where you have to be invited or qualified to go. I mean, I get it. Like IBJJF, you have to win some tournaments and spend a whole bunch of money so you can get points and spend money to travel across the country and win a $3 medal. That's fantastic. But with ADCC, you have your ways getting paid. You're getting fed. You're getting 5-star hotel room. You're getting transported around. If you win, you're making big bags. You know, so it's like it is the best event out there.
It's the prestige more than anything. It is, though,
well,
right?
But that's what I'm saying. It's like the Olympics. Like there's guys that make more money fighting for me in one super fight than they win winning a gold medal. But it's like, what would you rather have on your background?
Seminar poster.
Oh, I won a super fighter. I won the ADCC, you know what I mean? It's like, it is the best. Look at Olympic athletes. Olympic athletes don't care. Like, Jordan Burroughs probably makes more on his Adidas contract than he ever has winning gold medals. You know what I mean? It's about having that on your resume, because that lasts forever. That's legendary.
They have the medal fund, right? Or what's that called? The Olympic medal fund, where they pay guys who win gold medals.
Yeah,
stuff,
you get, right? Well, I don't know what it is now, but when I was a kid, it was $25,000 for gold medal, $10,000 for silver, and $15,000 for silver and $10,000 for bronze. As if you're getting a gold medal at the Olympics.
Yeah, I would hope it's more than that now.
Right? I don't know if it is.
Yeah.
I don't know if it is. USOC is pretty tight. And so, you know, it's just one of those things. It's not about the money, even though there is money involved. It's just a whole event. And so we just want to make sure that every fighter that walks away from this experience, like, it's going to be the best experience that they've ever had. Wow. Win or lose, no matter what happens, they're going to compete in this event. It's going to be the most well-produced grappling event ever. And they're going to walk away feeling like they just competed in the Olympic Games.
Man, I'm so excited.
What a promo. What a promo. Are you guys going to ADCC?
That's what we're trying. That's what
I'm going
to
ADCC for sure.
And, I mean, I'm excited. I'm excited about it. The thing I'm honestly most excited about is like all the Fight to Win athletes that are out there competing, because like a lot of them, like I don't want to say I've had a big say in who gets picked. I've got to be in Mo's ear a little bit. Me and Sean have, which has been fun. You know what I mean? But it's like I'm not actually like put this guy in. Like you just hang up the phone on me. But you know, just to be able to have any input at all in an event that like I watched in 2003. You know what I mean? Like when I was coming up, I got to watch this thing, and now to have like any input at all on who gets to go in is really cool. And just to be able to see, you know, so many. I mean, we got to have at least like 40 or 50 Fight to Win athletes that are going to be competing at ADCC.
A majority of them have definitely been on the card. But what's really been surprising to me recently is seeing these guys that are in the same division taking fights at Fight to Win. We just saw DJ Jackson versus Edwin last weekend at Fight to Win, and or 2 weeks ago. And is that surprising you? These guys are willing to take those matches kind of ahead of the tournament.
You know, I didn't really want to do that, to be honest with you.
Why not?
Because like we're gonna see it anyways, like we're about to see all these matches, but it really started with Wagner. Wagner is like, I want to take out JT. If I take him out, I got a shot at getting the one seed. And then I think when I book that matchup, then I think the other athletes maybe started thinking, well, maybe if I take out somebody in my division, I'll get seated higher as well. Mm. So I think that's kind of like a lot of these guys are in this tournament. These guys are not idiots. Like these are guys that are, you know, successful professional jiu-jitsu athletes.
Been on the scene for
been on the scene forever.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I mean, and they're like, I'm trying to get more matchups of like guys that, to get them warm ups. I mean, that's what the main thing. But it's like these aren't warm up matches.
They're tough matches.
You know, JT Wagner was not a warm up match. Yeah. DJ Edwin's not a warm up match. You know, I'd like to get there's a couple people.
Wagner
I'd
JT like to, is like a ADCC final or ADCC semifinal. You know?
Hopefully final this year. But you know, some of them, it's just like I would personally like to see. You know, like certain matches from guys that are in different divisions. So I'd like to see like some guys that are in 77 fighting in 88. And then some of the things I'm trying to do now, is some of the guys I've been in Mo's ear about that I'd like to get on the reserve list. I'm trying to get them matches against guys that are already in ADCC, like Cody Steele. You know, I'd like to get see him get a chance if, you know, he's able to take out John Sataba this weekend.
Let's talk about this match. That's a crazy match coming up here on 121.
Yeah, I mean, it's a big risk, you could say, for John Sataba. He hasn't been that active this year since winning trials back in November of 2018. And Cody has been on a tear. You know, he's
still a brown belt, too.
Still a brown belt, beating black belts. He beat DJ Jackson recently. And now he's taking on John Sataba, a trials medalist. That's an insane match to even book. I love it.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's ranked number 4 in the world, right? So it's like, luckily, with the Flow Grappling rankings, you don't have to be a black belt to be ranked that high. I mean, obviously, in Gi, you'd have to be ranked that high because that's how the rankings are done. But in No-Gi, you know, you got William Tackett's ranked number 11. Nicky Rod's ranked number 6, I believe. And there's some other guys that are purple belts, brown belts that are up there.
Mateus Lutz is another brown belt.
Mateus Lutz, that are – they're ranked really high. And so it's like, why not? You know, even if they haven't – been, you know, they're not ranked that high, give him a shot, you know. And luckily there's guys like Sataba that are like, cool, he's ranked number 4 in the world, give him to me, you know. And then there's other guys out there that are just like, oh, he's not a black belt, I don't want the match, you know, pay me $10,000 to take it. It's like, yeah, I'm gonna pay you $10,000 to fight a brown belt,
man. But you deal with it all, don't you? You deal with everybody from top to the bottom, you know, like you deal with everybody.
Who's
don't
the
you
tough, not specifically, but what kind of athletes are the toughest to deal with? Is it like the seasoned veterans? Who's
throw them under the bus, Seth? Throw them under the bus.
AJ Agger's arms.
Next
topic. No, I mean, honestly, like the kid in private is really easy to deal with. People that are super attention hungry on the internet are always going to be your hardest people to work with, you know? Like, I had trouble working with Dylan. I had trouble working with AJ. Anybody that has a large online social media presence is going to be difficult. Mm. That really focuses on that part of their career. But then again, Gabby Garcia, easiest person to work with in the world. So maybe what I'm saying doesn't even matter. Maybe it's just those two guys. But
let's look at the opposite direction a little bit, too. Like, for your money, who do you think, ADCC or not gi or no gi, who for your money is when this guy is or girl is fighting, whether on the Fight to Win stage or otherwise, like you need to watch them? Is there anybody out there who like you think is just must-see TV for jiu-jitsu fighters?
Mateus Gabriel is probably my favorite fighter to watch in the world.
Man, and I got to point out that you were an early adopter of you started the kind of Mateus hype train, I feel like, a little bit.
I think Mateus started that himself, but you know,
but he's been competing on Fight to Win since he was a purple belt, and now he's a black belt world champion.
Well,
isn't,
I mean,
isn't that crazy?
That's one of the it's one of the blessings that I had getting into this business. Unlike all the Kmart shows, is that when we started, we'd already been doing tournaments for 10 years. So like I've known William Tackett since he was a white belt. You know,
yeah,
you're an OG Texas guy too.
Yeah,
so I've seen these guys, and I knew all of them coming up. So it was like when we first started putting on shows, we already knew where all the hidden talent was. Mateus came. I don't remember when Mateus came to the United States, but Kaiser was just like, "I've got this kid, and he's incredible." And we put him on, and we were just like, "Oh my!" You know, as a purple belt, and then he won the purple belt gi and no gi title in two different weight classes, and then he won the brown belt gi and no gi title.
Dang.
So he had six different titles that he'd won at Fight to Win, and then he did his black belt debut at Fight to Win on 2 days' notice against Marcelo Andre, and then he wound up losing that one.
That was a crazy match, though. It was a really good match.
Yeah, it could have gone either way. I mean, I personally would have given it to Marcelo because like he hit a foot sweep to a flying triangle.
That's your stuff too.
I didn't even care what else happened. Like, I didn't even watch the rest of the match because I was just like nerding out over the foot sweep to the flying triangle. So it's like, you know, they weren't very happy about the result in that, but I mean, obviously Mateus got him back twice now. You know, I love watching Mateus. You know, of the people competing out there in ADCC, JT, Wagner, I mean, all the guys that I book consistently that are out there, but it's more of a fan thing for me, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's like,
yeah,
especially the people that I become good friends with, you know, over the past 4 years, you know, they get a chance to go out there and show off. I can't wait to watch Gabby, you know, and if Tiani makes it to the finals to fight Gabby, that'll be
at ADCC you're talking about.
That'll be fun to watch.
You were telling us a story earlier, because you're a frequent competitor on Fight to Win as well. Who's the guy that you're looking to face one day?
I want
to
fight Wagner Rocha.
That's the craziest thing
he
I've ever heard.
He knows that. He knows that. And Cyborg knows that. And my whole staff knows that. And everybody consistently tells me that that will be the end of me and I will get murdered.
We usually have some fight sports guys on there watching. So.
We do have Mo right now. Mo's watching. What's up, Mo?
So the way I look at Wagner Rocha is like, if you're going to beat, like, I get it, you know, jiu-jitsu's not a fight, you know, whatever, okay? I can't fight, right? I cannot get into a fist fight with somebody. I have busted hands, and technically, I'm a huge pussy when it comes to street fighting. Like, I will lose. Like, I'm not a good MMA fighter.
What do you mean technically?
Well, that's what it is.
Okay.
I did it. I fought a bunch of times. I was terrible at it, but I've always been a little bit dirty. I've always been kind of scrappy, and I've always loved that. Like when you're training in the room, you know, like when I train with Isaiah Wright and he turns it up. Mm. Like I hate going with him when he's like going super easy and flowing with me. But maybe I get lucky and catch him, and then he turns it up and beats the crap out of me. Or when I went with Roberto Jimenez, and I almost got an advantage, and then he scored 87 points on me. You know, like I like that, like getting
the fight,
like I love getting that. And with Wagner, you're always in that fight, you know.
That's true. So it's like, he will give it to you.
No, but that's what I'm saying. There's a lot of people out there that it's like, oh, I wouldn't, you know, that don't want to face him or want to do that. It's like, dude, be able to go with somebody that like does not care. He will bend your hands, he'll cover your face, kick you in the back off the stage, or whatever. Whatever. Is that too soon? No. You know, to me, there's no more fun possible matchup in the world than Wagner Rocha. So hopefully one day I will lose 50 pounds.
I think Wagner taken anyways.
I know.
No, that's not the point. No. Wagner
you
want
to lose 50.
Wagner will fight me at any weight. It does not matter because he knows what the outcome will be.
Yeah.
But in my mind, and everybody I know disagrees with me on this, including all of my coaches and all of my friends, say I'm going
to
get
killed. Maybe you should listen to him.
No,
though.
That's not the point.
Yeah.
The point is, like, So if I can get down to 170 pounds, it'll be the best shape I've been in, like, in my entire life. So then I have whatever chance I have at surviving in this match, I have to be in the best shape of my life.
I don't know. I feel like you'd have a better chance if you were 250 pounds.
I don't see it that way because the lighter I get, the better athlete I am. So if I can get down to 170, I mean, I'm sure there's a bunch of steroids I can take to get down there. So maybe I'll just like take a ton of steroids, get down to 170, put on 30 pounds the next day, be 200 pounds, and it'll still probably beat the living crap out of me.
Let's book it. I'm ready.
But I'm going to get some shots in. I'm going to foot sweep him. I'll foot sweep him too. I don't know. Honestly, though, like I know he'd kill me. It's kind of more of a joke thing to me at this point now because like he's so much better than I could ever be. But it's like it's honestly my dream matchup.
But it points to an interesting philosophy behind Fight to Win. You put action above all else, and it's a really interesting format. It's pretty unique, I would say, in all of professional jiu-jitsu. Why is that so important to you, to be exciting, to put on thrilling matches?
Well, when we started this, I mean, honestly, I personally find jiu-jitsu boring to watch. Okay, I'm not a technical jiu-jitsu practitioner. You know, like when I'm competing, like I'm just trying to, you know, twist your people and grab kimuras, and that's like that's the end. That's the end of my game, right? The lapel stuff.
I've been there. Yeah, yeah.
The intricate, you know, like I don't even know what to call this stuff. I don't even follow it. You know what I mean? Like, so it's like
Bambolo.
I don't have problems with that stuff. Like, I'm not one of those people that's like, oh, that Bambolo doesn't work. Guard pulling, you know, whatever. My problem with it is I grow up watching football. I grew up watching basketball, and I watch, you know, I watch judo my whole life, and I watch college wrestling. And to me, that stuff's exciting, right? So when I started doing jiu-jitsu, when I started promoting jiu-jitsu, we said we need to find a way to make this exciting to watch, right? Because if it's boring, it doesn't matter how cool us nerds think it is. We're trying to get the people in the crowd that don't do jiu-jitsu excited about doing jiu-jitsu. And you're not going to do that by two people sitting there holding somebody in side control or in 50-50 guard and coming up at the end and pounding on their chest and pointing to God to thank them for coming up and getting an advantage.
It can be tough.
That's
sure.
not going to sell the 13-year-old in the crowd right there, or the 35-year-old, you know, that was maybe a high school football player wants to try a new sport. You got to see the lights and the action and the crowd getting excited, and that's what, you know, slams come in, and that's why, you know, just hunting for submissions and going for that stuff, that's what people that don't watch a sport need to see in order to change their mindset from being, oh, I'm just here to support my friend from work, to, oh, I think I could do that. That was cool. I want to do that. And it's not that dangerous. It's like, you remember when you go to MMA show like a few years ago or before we started doing this, or because that was pretty much the only outlet we had, right? Before we started promoting this all over the country. It was, I go and I join a gym, and I get my white belt, and I get my blue belt, then I go over to kickboxing, then I learn how to kickbox, and then I have to go fight in a cage. I have to go kickbox.
It's a bit different.
Just
a
test.
If I want any glory, if I want anybody to see what I'm doing, because nobody wants to go into a tournament and spend, you know, 6 hours there and $10 is sitting there and see something they don't understand what's going on with nothing, and you can't even see the, because the people are standing in front of the mat.
It's not spectator friendly.
No, it's not at all. Sure. And so, you know, we're just like, I wanted to make it something that I knew that I could turn people in the crowd into students. And so that's why we put the excitement of it above all else, you know. We've kind of changed, I don't want to say we changed the rule, we didn't change the rules, we kind of changed the criteria for winning a little bit, to where if there's not an almost finish or someone's not constantly attacking more, the referee kind of looks at more of the overall match, not versus, you know, fake submission attempts, you know what I mean? Just feel like
balance,
who you feel won. So I feel like we've been getting a lot more of the right people winning the matches lately. You know, but I mean, to me, that's what it's all about. You know, getting these guys paid, turn them into rock stars for the couple minutes that they have out there, you know, and getting the people in the crowd to start training themselves.
If you guys want to know more about the history of Fight to Win and some of the Seth Daniels ethos, we did a documentary on Fight to Win. Fight to Win 100 went down to Hawaii with you. We got a little clip or a little trailer here we can play along with it. But what was that experience like for you, Seth? You saw the documentary. Did you like it? How was the process to here's the trailer for it a little bit, as you can see on the screen.
I thought it was a lot of me. you know,
you're an important character.
Yeah,
for sure.
I know. There's a lot to my team. You know.
Yeah.
You know, Missy does a ton of stuff with the logistics, and then, you know, Evan, you know, is in my opinion the best lighting guy. You know, obviously in martial arts, but even I go to concerts and I'm like, Evan's better than these guys. You know, except Slipknot, they blew him out of the water last week. you know, and then, you know, all the rest of my staff with Gary doing the video. And Dan and Joel and Q and
it is an eclectic
Jayden
crew.
Like,
that
yeah,
you guys
I mean
have.
It's a interesting, you know, circus. You know, it's like a yeah, I don't know. It's like a bunch of circus rejects.
No, I was excited that we got to feature the Night Pigeon, of course, and
best nickname in jiu-jitsu.
Yep, yeah, the Night Pigeon versus Chris Lieben there.
Yeah, he's a good kid.
Yeah, that was
yeah. I mean,
fun.
They've all been so loyal for such a long time. We've added a couple of new people. You know, Missy's son started working for us, and we added Jaden, and she's like Evan's lighting assistant, and a couple more people. But you know, Lauren's done a lot of the venue searching, and there's a lot of stuff that goes on behind the scenes that allows me to be able to focus on just matchmaking and promoting. And if it wasn't for them, I wouldn't be able to do it. You know, it's one of those things where it's like when I was working at 24 Hour Fitness, my biggest problem was I always had that mentality where it's like, if you want something done right, you got to do it yourself. You know what I mean? And I think anybody, when they first start their business, that's kind of how it goes, right? So it's like, oh, you have to do it yourself. You have to own this. You got to own every single part of it.
You guys can watch that whole documentary, 30-minute documentary on Flow Grappling, just to shout that out real quick.
But it's one of those things now where I'm lucky where I'm in the point where it's like, I don't even have to show up to my event until an hour before the doors. I know that the production's going to be on point. I know that the ticketing's on point. I know that every aspect of the event is completely set up, and I have no stress, and I don't have to micromanage at all. And that
you can't do 20 things well, right? You can do a couple things well, but you can't do 100 things very well. You got to get some other guys to pick that stuff up, and ideally, you're going to get experts, you know, like Missy and Troy and stuff, who can elevate those jobs and do better. So I mean, I remember when I went to Fight to Win 3, I met Missy, I met Troy, you know, I met you there,
and
you
Evan.
Know,
Evan
yeah, and Evan was there.
Joel started at 5, and then Brittany was with us for a while, and hopefully coming back soon. And you know, and then like I said, we've added and subtracted a few people, but it's the same core of people. You know, Gary's been with me for 12 years.
Yeah, Gary hasn't missed a single show, which is crazy to me because you guys watching at home.
He's done 300 shows with me.
That's so
incredible.
We've done
300 events together.
All of our live streams are headed up by the man Gary, and I don't know what would happen if Gary didn't.
For real, it is when you think about
it, he's going to want more money.
It is a legendary crew though that you guys have put together, and of course you got a new guy in there, Dan, who I like a lot. He's been on like every show since he's started. It feels like
Dan's had 12 fights on the show since he started.
That's crazy.
Last November,
12. How many do you have?
12. Damn. I think I've had 12 or well, we don't count
so 13, 12 ones. With an asterisk. Oh, okay.
No, you don't count. We don't count the ones that you have to take the day of unless you win.
That seems
no, it's fair.
Okay,
you're sitting
if you say so.
No, you're sitting there and you're doing your job, and then I pull you off the doing ticketing after, and especially my staff, they're high all the time. You know, and I'm like, oh, you know, put your butt down and go fight on the stage. Like, they don't have, like, there's no option.
But they still took it, though, right? You still said yes.
They don't have a choice.
Okay.
There's no option.
They'll be fired otherwise?
It's not an option. It's just like.
If they're going to work there.
If you work for Fight to Win, then you have to have your gi and your rash guard, and you have to be available to fight on 1 minute's notice. That's part of the gig. It's just how it goes.
Not even just once in the night, though.
It's happened multiple
possibly
times.
Twice.
Dan had to fight twice in Oklahoma. He had to fight Hunter Colvin. He had to give up 40 pounds.
Hunter's like a
Hunter
beast.
Murdered
yeah.
Him. Yeah.
Hunter's a beast.
And then Dan had to fight twice last weekend, too. So, I mean, you never know what's going to happen in the crowd.
Dang, yeah, that is impressive. You guys have kept together all this way, and with Evan and everybody. Man, I can tell a quick story. I remember when I first met you, actually. I don't know if you remember this. I did, as a white belt, I did Texas, what do you call this? Texas State Championships. I used to do up in Round Rock.
Yeah.
I did. I think you were still a purple belt. I remember it. And I was a white belt. And you did that. You did the Texas State Championship when I went
it
there.
Was,
I remember coming up to you and weighing in and stuff like that. And
it
yeah,
was
yeah.
In Georgetown.
Yeah, yeah. It was
the
super
high
far.
School.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And
I don't remember because you were a white belt.
Seth
and that's not even
white
a real person. Yeah, like until you like. I mean, like I don't even like recognize you as a human being at that point. So you shouldn't recognize yourself. But, you don't even have a reflection as a white belt.
Yeah, person. I'm surprised that I can remember it as a white belt because I didn't exist at that point in time. But I do remember, man. And yeah, it's true. You just posted another clip of us an interview that we did, and you were a lot skinnier back then.
Oh, sure. Well played, you Jesus.
Like, bringing it back. Yeah. Bringing it back.
That's fine. No, that's fair enough. Yeah, I've taken a lot of steroids in the past few years.
You were like
165
pounds. Like.
Yeah. This job, it adds weight onto you. And,
I'm just kidding. Buddy.
Thanks. I'm going to go throw up in the bathroom now.
I mean, everybody keeps telling me that I look a lot bigger, too. But I should start working out because people just keep telling me that it looks like I work out, but I don't.
No, so. I can tell you don't, for sure.
Yeah, yeah. So it's just the travel diet that, you know, all over the place.
Yeah.
You know,
well, you fit in really well in Austin. You know what I mean? It's like you could be like a musician. Mm. You could be a bum.
Okay.
You you could.
I've tried
it
out.
You could be a CEO of a company.
Sure.
You never know out here. Yep. It depends on how tight your pants are. And you're not wearing any, so.
So he works at Flow.
Yeah, so he works
perfect,
at Flow.
Perfect, perfect.
Seth, what do you guys do during the week? I feel like your weekends are well documented. We know you're working 48 hours straight. What the hell happens Monday through Thursday?
What do I do, or what does my staff do?
I don't know. What's more interesting?
It's definitely not me. I just honestly sit on my recliner and try to match shows and watch Friends. And I don't know what the rest of my staff. We really don't, like, communicate all that much during the week because we like kind of live together on the weekends. You know, I've got, like I said, I got three kids and, you know, the family life at home. So, you know, luckily Lauren takes care of a lot of stuff with the kids, as does, you know, Joel lives with me and helps out a bunch. So I'm able to work as much as I can. And, you know, other than that, I'm super boring. Like, I'm a total introvert. You know, I don't like most people. And so, like, I just like to be at home with my friends on TV, you know, Phoebe and Rachel and Monica.
What are you, you're like a Ross guy or a Joey? You're a Joey guy?
Yeah, man. Yeah, I'm a Ross guy. You find this guy.
Before my
dude.
Time, dude. I didn't watch Friends. I never watched Friends.
Oh, that explains everything. Friends is the greatest show of all time. So basically, there's these six people.
Oh, I know the premise. I know the premise. There's some coffee
involved.
They go
to this coffee house.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. No, but I watch a ton of movies and work, like, all the time. And I just, like, fall asleep and wake up and then work more and fall asleep and wake up. And then hopefully I can eventually get back into training because, like, right now I'm just, like, that's all I do is work right now. And it's, like, I'm so tight. It's so funny because it's, like, I should have all this time since all these surgeries to, like, get my stuff done and get on top of work and all that stuff. But it's, like, you take away jiu-jitsu and you take away, like, the exercise portion of it and you get less done.
Mm. Do you like the job better when you can train?
Oh, or
do
yeah, like, so much better.
Yeah.
Life is so much better when you can train and work out and stuff. I just got released to be able to train with my neck, and my hand's still messed up, so I can't train, thanks to 19-year-old Nicole Evangelista.
Your hand?
Yeah. That's who busted my hand.
Really?
Yeah.
Nice.
The day before I was competing, I grabbed her belt, right? I was like, oh, I'm going to go light today because I'm competing in 2 days. I'm going to go with the girl that I've been training since she was 7 years old, and grabbed her belt, and then she did a hip switch and tore all the ligaments and tendons in my finger and then laughed about it online and sent me pictures of cupcakes and was like, well, at least you can eat these now. Yeah, thanks a
Savage.
Lot, Nicole. Yeah,
Savage.
Awesome. Go back
Nicole,
to Kyle.
Nicole's a killer.
But, so hopefully I get back in, man. Life's a lot better when you can – everything's
true.
Better when you can train, you know?
Very true.
What's your matchmaking process look like? I know you're very in tune with our rankings and use those quite a bit, but what are you looking for, like at a main event or even just like a sick, you know, top five? Matches for an event.
That's honestly, it's pretty easy. I have a list of everyone that we consider all stars, you know, which is anybody that's won a World Pan ADCC or World Pro title in the past 5 years, and then anyone that's ranked in the top five on Flow Grappling. And those are the guys I'm looking for. Like, you want to get paid and you want to get good matches, win one of those big events, or get ranked in the top five.
There you go, Chase.
That's a great way to get ranked.
Literally that easy.
You got the path now, Chase.
It's that easy. I message all those guys a few months out. I get their availability, and then I look at my list, and there's usually about 30 people per event that are available on that date from around the world. I mean, we're flying people in from Japan, Brazil, wherever. It really doesn't matter, you know? And then I just look at the available matchups, and one of the main things I look for is matches that have never happened. Hmm. Like, that's super important to me. I like having the first one.
Fresh,
you know what I mean?
Up.
Like, I almost didn't do Wagner JT because they fought once before, but it was 9 years ago. Something stupid like that. Or five years ago, I don't remember.
Okay.
And it was like at a Miami Open, you know? And it's like, you know, nobody saw it.
Yeah,
it's one of those things. It's like, even, it's like fighting on one of those small super fight shows. It's like...
Because they were supposed to fight, right? Ricardo, I remember, was telling us that they were supposed to fight at the ADCC trials 1 year, I believe, and then it didn't pan out.
JT got hurt.
His ear blew up.
Yeah, so it's like, it's one of those things where I look at that and I really like to do matches that have never happened. And so that's kind of like, if I have two all-stars, I like constantly look for criteria, and I like to put people from different weight classes together at a catch weight just because they wouldn't normally fight.
Sure.
And they probably won't fight, you know? So it's like, try to make them fun that way. And then just looking for the best people, you know? It doesn't matter if it's male, female, trans. I don't really care. I'll
put You've definitely been a leader in promoting women's jiu-jitsu. You have probably the most women's main events in all of professional jiu-jitsu. Why is it such an important thing for you?
You know, to be honest with you, I did it when I did the Elliot Marshall's podcast. I talked to him about this too. It's really effortless. Like, I haven't really like focused on, oh, I got to get these female matches. I haven't, you know, like some people have, where it's like, you know, all women's card or all this or that. I just look for the best people.
What was it? Fight to win four was McKenzie versus
Rossi was, that was four. That one I wanted a female main event, because at that time, like, I signed Lovato Jr. and then it was like, well, what's next? You know, and at that point, like, I my list of people that were willing to fight to win was still pretty small. You know,
yeah.
It was just like they didn't want to take the risk because of Metamoris.
So not a lot of people knew.
It was still tough. So I was like, well, I'm going to go after some female athletes because I know I have one locally, you know. And so I went out there and grabbed Angelica. That ended up being McKenzie, you know, whatever. But it's just one of those things where it's just like I said, I look at the list, look at what the best matches are, you know, and then that becomes the main event. You know, if the females are the best match on the card, then they're the main event. It doesn't. I always said this from day one, like, it doesn't matter what your gender is, depending, is that's going to determine how much you get paid. You know, Gabby Garcia is by far the highest paid person that we've ever had on our show, because she's earned it. You know what I mean? Who else have I had that's had 3 ADCC titles and 9 world championships?
I'm going to say nobody.
Nobody.
It's hard to win.
I don't believe anybody else has.
Yeah.
So it's like, so why, because she's a female, should she get paid less? You know what I mean? It doesn't make any sense. It's never made sense to me. And so, I mean, to be honest, like, on the undercard, I do honestly, like, I try to put as many female fights on as possible.
Sometimes it can be tough to find matchups.
There's a lot less.
Yeah.
If I could have 10 female fights per show, I would. And it's because they're the most exciting. The crowd loves them. It's just like the UFC. Look at the UFC. Their cards are packed now with females because everybody loves to watch them. They're super tenacious. They're never boring. Right, they pull good crowds. People pay to come see them. People watch them online. You know, they smell better than dudes. Mm-hmm. You know, but you know, for the most part, you know, it's just like I feel like, you know, the females are just, they're more exciting to watch personally. And you know, when it comes to the headliners and stuff, just whoever the best person is, and it just happened. You know, especially this year, in the past 10 shows, I've had Gabby and I've had Natch and I've had, you know, Anna Carolina. And it's just like a lot of the females have been coming, you know, Lita to the show. And so there, yeah. I've been lucky, you know.
We got another another highlight here. This is one from back in the day. Might not have to go down too far. Oh, no, this is not from back in the day. This is just
from 94.
From this the other day. This is, I like this one because you see a little behind the scenes of what you guys go through. But yeah, just some more fight to win highlights playing while we watch here. You got another. You guys are going back to
Richmond.
Richmond, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, soon, right?
Yeah, San Francisco. I said that about this in the documentary. That was a huge turning point for.
That's what I thought we were going to watch for a second, but I.
Yeah, no, it's okay. I mean, it's the same place.
Yep.
But that San Francisco event was really the one that really made us, I feel like. It was at the Kezar Pavilion, which is the worst venue in America.
Me and Chase were both there.
It was a crazy one.
It was a crazy
this venue, like, if you never, I mean, you've probably been there competing before, but, like, there's rats that are this big.
That's in San Francisco, man.
They're everywhere. They're not in the one I use in Richmond, but like the rats like running underneath the bleachers, like it's so gross.
Oh, man.
And like the venue required us to put 180 of these 80-pound rubber mats down on the floor,
so you wouldn't hurt the basketball floor.
That was their 30-year-old basketball floor, right? And so you have to drag all these mats down, which isn't, that's not the hard part of it, right? But that show, it like we sold like 3,000 tickets to it, right? And honestly, it was funny because when I used to make those fight cards, I used to lean on Mike Columbus a lot, and because I didn't know who anybody was. It's like I only knew people that competed in Colorado and Texas. That was it. So it was like, you know, Samir Santri and you know Cachinho, and I knew who Kurt was because I'm pretty sure he's my dad. you know, like other people like that. I was like, I don't know who any of these people are. And yeah. Mike's like, this is like everybody. So these are all the top guys in Northern California. Mm-hmm. And so we put together this insane fight card, And, you know, we got, like I said,
Gary Tonin was on there, Yuri, Dean Lister.
Everybody was on there. And it just, like, it came together as this, like, huge event. All these people came to it. And that was when the mat thing started.
With banging on the mats.
Yeah, and it was just like, because we, coming from the MMA background, you always had to have barriers, right? So you had the stanchions, and then you had the people are, you know, X amount of feet away from the boxing commission. And so, like, that's kind of what I started with Fight to Win. Like, 1 through 6 had that. Mm. They all had the stanchions like that. You know, San Diego had them. Like, we kept people away.
Yeah.
So if they would fall off, they wouldn't fall into the crowd, right? Well, we sold too many tables in San Francisco. So we didn't use the stanchions. We left
you
them outside.
To push the tables up against.
We did, there was no room. I remember being with Troy and just being like, what are we going to do? And we were like turning tables sideways and like trying to, because we sold like 200 tables in
trying
there.
Trying to fit them all in.
Yeah. And so he was like, I think it was Troy that was like, we got to push them all the way up. That's the only way to do it. So like, all right. So we push them all the way up. And then it was either Nick Green was competing or Kurt was competing. I think it was Kurt.
I remember they definitely did it for Kurt.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the Half Gracie gym just started pounding on the mats and all that, and like drinks were flying up. And then I just remember watching that and just being like, that's what we're doing wrong. We gotta focus more on the party and less on being professional. Not that we were all ever like super professional, but you know what I mean? Like, and so we really went that direction, like took a hard left after San Francisco. That's why it was such an important event for us. And I believe it was our highest viewed event we've ever had.
Yeah, that definitely kicked it off where we were like, oh my God, Fight to Win is going to be the next big thing.
Yeah,
but everybody always thinks they're going to be the next big thing. True. You know what I mean? Everybody always thinks. And I don't think I ever thought that. I never thought when I started this that like, you know, because at the time, Meta Morris was still around, you know, and Meta Morris was like, even though they had it
over everything,
even though he hadn't did what he, you know, wound up doing and ruining the company, it was still like considered the professional. I mean, that's where I got the idea from.
Yeah.
I saw what he was doing and I was like, oh, this isn't the right business model for this at all. Like, he's going to lose tons of money. And then I was like, I'm just going to do it like I do my MMA shows. And so I saw what he did. And then I was like, I'm just going to do it better than him, you know? And then, but I never thought that. I remember saying it at the first Fight to Win Pro. I was like, you're going to see shows like this pop up all over the country. I said that to everyone.
Wow.
I was like, because we've been, because we've been successful doing this, they're going to pop up all over the country. And then I went to Texas and I said the same thing there. And then I went another one in Texas, and I went back there and to Denver, and I never thought that it was going to be Fight to Win that was going to be the company that was going to be going all over the country. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I just figured there'd be copycats everywhere, which there are. You know what I mean? There's three in every market now. You know, and but you know, that wasn't originally the plan. The plan was just to do Colorado. The plan was only to do Colorado.
Really?
And then it was Colorado and Texas, and then. Luckily, with the support we got in San Diego, it gave us the courage to go across the country. And then, you know, thanks to Tom DeBlass in New Jersey and Jared Weiner in Philly gave us the confidence to go on the East Coast. Wagner and Cyborg in Miami. And it's just like each market has like one or two guys. Lovato in Oklahoma, you know, where it's like one or two guys that really get behind it and really help you push forward.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the team, the whole Gracie Baja community in Seattle, like they're seriously like every single market, there's one group that really elevates and pushes you out. You know, and we've gotten lucky, you know? And so now, I mean, we're trying to do pretty much two shows in 20 markets a year and then start doing our international stuff this year. And, you know, hopefully a whole lot more of that next year.
Do you remember that? Do you remember the weigh-ins for Dean and Yuri?
Of course. It was all my fault.
Was it?
Yeah.
All right.
I told everybody this.
You take the blame for it.
It was my fault.
All right. Perfect.
I flew Dean Lister into the airport. Right. I sent him an Uber to get him to the hotel. I never told him that he had to go to weigh-ins. I just
why not?
Because Dean is not on social media, and so I had been sending everybody in the Facebook thread all the stuff, and he's not on social media, and he didn't check his email.
Know.
So it's like he always communicated with me through text, And I just didn't even think about it. And so he was like 45 minutes late to weigh-ins, and like Benji and Yuri and everybody's all riled up, and Dean's just like, I don't really understand what the problem is. Like, I didn't know I was supposed to be there.
I thought I was going to die that day for a minute.
Like, Yuri almost murdered Reed.
He didn't know he was supposed to be there. It was totally my fault. And I tried telling that to Yuri and to Benji and to everybody, and they were just like,
but
not hearing it.
They're riled up.
Whatever. It worked out. He gave us a good promo video.
Yep.
Yes, it was awesome. It's one of my favorite photos.
We've actually used that a few times. Yeah. Yeah. It worked out.
Man, whatever. I feel like you've just you've been able to you know, get your feet wet in all these different communities throughout the United States in jiu-jitsu, and I don't know, I'm curious, does it restore your faith in jiu-jitsu as a whole to be able to go to, you know, Seattle and Phoenix and New Jersey and Miami and see these thriving jiu-jitsu communities that are so willing to open up their doors to you and put on these shows and invite people into their house and show off what jiu-jitsu they have in their community?
I never lost faith in jiu-jitsu as a sport to begin with, but it's growing for sure. I mean, I think what we've done, and even some of our copycats have done, have taken away from MMA quite a bit. You know, I know that every market I go into, I pull a bigger crowd than whatever the MMA show is. Mm-hmm. Like 100%, I know that for sure.
Exactly.
You know, including the ones that are on television, outside of the UFC and Bellator. You know, so. You know, I think we've been able to open up people's eyes to see that it is a spectator sport, and the markets are all growing. You know, everyone's growing with jiu-jitsu. You know, I'm not saying, you know, we're taking, you know, full responsibility and credit for that. Obviously, it goes from, you know, the schools knowing how to teach people and the sport being fun and exciting and all that stuff too. But, you know, I mean, it is cool to see in every market to see people that messaged me when they were white belts and blue belts to get on the show, and I told them keep grinding, and now they're purple belts getting on the stage, you know, and mm-hmm. people we had debut as teenagers are now brown belt world champions, and purple belts are black belts, and, you know, all the way through, it's been fun. But yeah, I mean, I would say everywhere outside of like a couple of spots across the country has been really impressive with how much support the jiu-jitsu community gets from people that are not only in the community but outside the community looking in. You know, a couple spots in the South aren't worth talking about. But other than that, man, especially the coast, mm-hmm. you know, coasts are no joke, man, especially the East and the West. It's insane.
What's the city you think is going to be like the next San Diego?
San Diego?
is there another San Diego?
The cities that are already the top ones are going to continue to be the top ones, yeah. You know, because that's where the main
Nothing
academies
on,
are.
On the rise, though, that you think is going to?
I mean, there's stars in every market, you know? I mean, like, especially Texas has a ton of talent out here.
That must make you proud, too. Or
yeah.
Be fun to see a lot of those Texas guys that you
been
grew up
seeing,
with.
We've all been seeing it, yeah, you know? Yeah. But Texas has got a lot of talent. Florida's got a lot of talent. You know, there's talent in every state, especially because like Ohio is a perfect example, right? Like GFT has monsters out there. They're not from Ohio.
Yeah.
Like Dante Leon's from Canada, right?
Don't hold it against
Gooch him. Gooch is from Brazil, you know, but Vitor is from Brazil, but they're in Ohio now. You know what I mean? So it's like anywhere where you get these transplanted Brazilians, usually, it's going to take off if they're good teachers.
Yeah.
You know, and Ohio is a great example. Minneapolis has some great guys in it. It's like there's literally every market in the country, but the schools that have established themselves as the school, I just don't see any other market overtaking that. Like New York is New York. I mean, you got Marcelo, Henzo, Unity. You know, those schools out there, then you go to the West Coast and there's Atos and AOJ and 10th Planet. And it's just, that's people I feel like are going more towards those locations than those locations branching out. Like for instance, Cole Abate is going to California.
Oh, is he really?
He's going to AOJ.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Horrifying.
That is that's
horrifying.
Interesting move. Cole's good.
Cole is the best child grappler in the world. And he has been for a very long time.
That's a tough room there at AOJ. A lot of orange belt, green belts.
I've never been beat up worse. I say that every
guarantee
week.
You yeah. that hey. Cole Abate will be a black belt world champion probably by the time he's, well, how old do you have to be a black belt? 19?
Yeah.
19 years old. I'm calling it now. Cole Abate, black belt world champion.
Young easily. Jamie, save this clip so we can bring this back up.
No, but I mean, I'm just saying, like, there's kids like that. Like, Pauly Westhoff just moved from Chicago to Atos. Kid's a monster. Arizona has a ton of tough kids.
You think that's a good idea? You think these guys need to go to the big gyms? You think everybody should migrate to these bigger gyms, or if they want to be the best in the world?
to be honest with you, man, I kind of came up under that mindset through judo. So, like, I would spend summers in Chicago with the Coens and then at the Olympic Training Center. You know, my dad would have never let me move. Or my dad, you know, I think back in the day, things were a little bit different than they are now with how parents are with their kids when it comes to sports. Like, people were willing to uproot their entire family to support their kids' athletic career. I don't think it was so much the case when I was a child growing up, especially not in my family. You know, my dad had like a, you know, super legit job, you know, and so by then there was no way it was happening. So, but, you know, I mean, my kid has a chance to play in the NFL, you know, and if he has a better chance of getting a Division I scholarship playing in Katy, Texas, I'll move out there. Mm-hmm. So I'm under the mindset that if you want to be the best, you got to train with the best. And if the best kids are at AOJ, then you go to AOJ. If the best team, you know, but it also matters what's best for you. You know what I mean? Like, I wouldn't do well at
at AOJ.
No. I wouldn't do well at like even like Gracie Baja Northridge, which is like one of the best gyms in the country. They go way too hard, man. Like, me personally. Because I'm old and I'm broken. Like, it wouldn't work for me. My gym is perfect for me. It's a tough gym, with a good room, some really high-level people. Like, John Combs comes in and stuff like that. But it's more of, like, a family-type atmosphere. And I think before you were to go, well, that's the best gym in the world. That's the one I want to go to. That's where Gordon Ryan trains. You got to visit all these places. You got to live with them for a couple of weeks.
That's great
advice. Because you can't tell how a gym is based on one visit. You got to be there for at least a few weeks, maybe even a month, before you make a life decision on where you're going to go. You know, because the personality of a gym, in my opinion, is more important than the actual people training in it. Because if you don't even want to go there, like, who cares?
It's terrible. Yeah.
If I live next to, say, I don't want to say a gym name. Say I live next to the Henzo Gracie. I'm a Henzo Gracie Black Belt, so why not? Say I live next to the Henzo Gracie in New York City. I've never been there. But say I went there and I was like, oh, you know, I'm Henzo Gracie Black Belt. That's the Henzo Gracie school. And I would get murdered there. Everybody there would kill me. I'd probably hate it. I'd never want to go.
You know, they would.
Unless there's an old people crew. Like the parents.
Old people crew's tough too, man.
No, but I'm just saying, you got to find what gym works best for you. And then if that's a decision you make, I mean, I think why not, you know? If your kid's goal is like Cole and he has a chance to be that, why would you not support him? You know what I mean? Give him the opportunity to be the best. And I think a lot of parents nowadays too have the ability to, you know, because some places like, I'm not 100% sure about this, but Atos and I think Fight Sports and a couple other gyms have like fighter houses.
Yeah, there are a lot of unofficial fighter houses and stuff like that and sponsorship programs that are helping build.
I know JT has one. Mm-hmm. JT Torres Central. Has one because I have one of my kids is up there. Eric Sines is up there.
Training. Oh, yeah. That's right.
He came up with us. And so it's like, you know, Kyle
we met him out there.
Kyle had one for Nicole. So, I mean, there's options. I think you just got to support your kids in whatever they want to do. And you know, if you have the ability to help them transition that way and chase their dreams, and, you know, screw it. Why not?
Absolutely. I think that's good advice. And it's different for every person, right? So you got to kind of find your own niche, that type of thing.
You mentioned you're going international. Where are you going?
We are going to Manchester on November 15th. We're going to the UK. We are going to do Brazil on the same day.
How are you doing that?
No, let me finish. We're going to do Sao Paulo on November 16th, and somehow another promotion that is on Flow Grappling somehow got my same venue on the same day. Magically, that
happened.
This is
a touchy subject.
Uh-oh. And no, it's cool. It's fine. They do a good job. I'm not hating on them. But they definitely beat me to the punch. And so we're going to go to the UK, and we're going to do a show over there. And hopefully that works out. And then next year, there's 6 countries that I'd like to do. I wanted to do 4 this year in international, and it didn't pan out. You know, I'm a very calculated person. So if I don't get like a good feeling in my gut, like this is a good idea, I'm just not going to do it. And that's how I felt, you know, like I really want to do Japan and I really want to do France, but I need to build the judo up a little bit more. I feel like, I need to get the American judo a little bit more, behind me. before I can go into Japan and have the respect I need over there in order to put together a full card. Because in those big markets, like in Russia, in Japan, in France, even London, like we got to use a lot of judo matches to fill the card out. Because there's I don't know if I can. I would rather have a card in Japan with 20 black belt judo matches and 20 jiu-jitsu matches than, you know, 15 purple belt matches.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
That's a great point. Absolutely.
So it's like, I'm not there yet where I want with judo in order to go to those main judo countries that I want to do shows in.
Fight to win Russia? Fight to win Kazakhstan?
Of course. I'm going there anyways in 2020, right? Or 2021. But hopefully Mo keeps me along. But yeah, I mean, the possibilities are endless. I really think we're going to spend a lot of time in Europe. I feel like Europe is the best place for us with our style.
Yeah, big judo
population and, out there. So Europe's going to be good for us, I think. We'll start with Manchester, go from there, see how France, maybe Spain goes. But, I mean, we're an American-based company, and, you know, I'm not going to take away the amount of events I'm doing in the U.S. to go do them in Europe. So hopefully, you know, the goal would be to be able to be successful enough over there to get a second setup and then be able to run events simultaneously on multiple continents. That's my goal.
Wow.
But, you know, everything's got to be one step at a time because, you know, it's my money. It's not, I don't have investors. I don't have, I'm not playing with house money. You know what I mean? So it's like an event bombs, you know, I risk not paying rent. Mortgage. I don't rent, but you know what I mean? You know what I mean? It's like, you know, my thing that I said from day one was like, we have to be able to pay the bills no matter what. Right. So, I mean, we're not in a place right now where it's like, oh God, you know, the show doesn't do well, you know, we're not going to pay our bills. But it's like, it's one of those things, like I always, me and Gary have always said this, like you have to have enough money that if nobody buys one ticket to your event, everybody can be paid. The staff can get paid. The fighters can get paid. The house can get paid. Everybody gets paid. And if you don't have that, you can't do an event. Mm-hmm. And so the goal after every show is to be able to have enough money to do another show. That's what me and Gary have always said since 2007. Just have enough to keep playing in the game, right? It don't matter how rich you are. It don't matter how poor you are. As long as you have enough to do one more show.
How many shows do you do in 2019? Or are you going to do in 2019?
This year? We started at 97. We're going to end at 135 plus Subversive and ADCC. So that'll be 40 plus four tournaments. So 44 events.
Wow.
It's a busy schedule, man.
It's not that hard, man. I mean, the hardest part is just like staying awake. I swear to God. Just staying awake. Because when energy drinks quit working, life gets hard, man.
You guys live on energy drinks. That's true.
Well, yeah. I mean, that and, you know, pure hatred. But the no, it's like seriously, like you get to a point where like you slam a 5 hour and fall right asleep.
Dang.
And that's where I'm at. So it's like I apologize to everybody in Seattle, Sacramento, Scottsdale, Austin, all the people that are reaching out to me trying to get on upcoming shows. I'm super far behind. I know this. I'm trying my best. It's a blame Mo from ADCC. It's all his fault.
Ouch.
He should have never hired me.
What's his Instagram?
Me.
Follow him on Instagram.
He should have. It's a private account. He won't add you.
Okay.
So it's all his fault. Blame him for everything and buy a ticket to ADCC.
Yeah, absolutely.
But yeah, I'm doing my best and I really appreciate, especially those markets, since I took this gig with ADCC, that the people, I've had very short time for them to promote the shows, and they're still doing it. They're still selling tickets, still keeping the doors open. And, you know, if it wasn't for the fighters' belief in what we do, you know, we would totally be out of the game by now, for sure.
You guys going back to Hawaii? Always asking me if you're going back to Hawaii.
Hawaii, November 23rd, and we're bringing our production out there this time, thank God. So I don't have a panic attack because I don't know how to push buttons on someone else's controller.
One of the best parts of the Fight to Win documentary.
What, me having a panic attack?
Yeah.
I don't remember that exactly.
That is the best time.
No, I mean, it's one of those things. It's like I'm a creature of habit. So it's like I have a controller that I use to play the videos. And, you know, I'm DJ iTunes. I'm the best iTunes DJ in the world. And so I hit the button and it doesn't work. And I freak out and I'm like, Evan! So I'm starting freaking out, Joel! And start like yelling at all my staff like it's their fault. Not like not like, you know, what did you do? Like, help me. I can't figure it out. And I like literally break down, and then it'll take me like 20 to 30 minutes just to get my whereabouts right if I can't figure out how the buttons work.
To push the button next to it, next to that
one. I'm telling you, man, all these everything's – I am not a technical person, right? So it's like when you have a new piece of equipment and you don't know how to use it, like – most people could probably figure it out. I'm not that guy.
Not that guy.
I'm not the guy to make things work. You know, I can push a button. That's my skill set. That's where I'm at.
Well, Seth, I think we did just about over an hour here.
It's been an hour that long?
Yeah.
Listen to me talk for an hour.
Sorry, guys. Pretty fun. We had a good time.
What'd you think after watching it and now living it?
It's fun. I like this.
Never again.
I like this one. I generally don't do podcasts because I don't believe anybody watches or listens to them. But since I actually watch and listen to this one every week, that I'm very honored to be a guest because I know you've had some other people on here that I really respect, like Claudia and Jamil and Edwin. You know, so it's fun to be in that group of people to say that I did the Fistful of Collars.
Oh, nice.
So I appreciate you guys being here. Please get a haircut. You look disgusting. Chase, good luck in the main event on Saturday.
Thank you. I'm very nervous.
Chase is going to be taking on Gabby Garcia. You just heard it live.
Oh, man, that is going to be a fight.
Yeah. Make sure you tune in after Gabby Garcia's match, win or lose. Gabby has a fun announcement that she's going to make.
Has a message for us.
Has a message for somebody.
Ooh.
And she's going to put it out there for the world to see.
Interesting.
It's going to be exciting.
There you have it, guys. Thanks for tuning in for another episode of Fistful of Collars. And be sure to watch Fight to Win 121 this Saturday, coming from Austin, Texas.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Seth.